It's a new year then, isn't it? It's an opportunity for a fresh start. Though, of course, at present, things are not looking too good in Australia. Millions of hectares of burnt land and property, lives lost, blame being shot off in all directions, and we're only part way into the hot weather. Furthermore, scientists, of course, are telling us that the weather events are, in the future, going to get worse. And perhaps most troubling in all this is that at one time I think a government would have called the nation to prayer. That doesn't seem to be happening these days. We seem no longer to believe as a nation that we need God's help, or indeed that God even exists. And with that sort of attitude, I do fear for the future. I fear what may happen. You see, in Isaiah's day, and we do learn from history, if we read the scriptures, in Isaiah's day, Judah had also ignored the warnings and turned their back on God. They had reaped the consequences. Babylon had come in and decimated their country. They had destroyed the temple. They had torn down the walls of Jerusalem, and they had taken the people captive back to Babylon. But in Isaiah 42, the reading that we had this morning, we have hope on the distant horizon. And I say distant because even at that time it was 400 to 500 years in the future. But that's also part of the strength of the message. In the message is told before the events which it predicts. Isaiah says, "New things I declare, before they spring into being, I announce them to you." I'm telling you what's going to happen in advance, says God through Isaiah. So a new beginning was promised, and this new hope surrounds a figure who is described in Isaiah as the servant of the Lord. So what do we learn about this servant? Well, on the front of your epistle, which you might want to actually refer to, I've written down 12 things that I've picked out from Isaiah about the servant. Firstly, he will be upheld by none other than God himself. In other words, God will take him and keep his hand upon him. He is chosen. God delights in him. God's spirit will be on him. He will bring justice to the nations in faithfulness, it goes on to say, and he will not give up, he will persevere. He will come in quiet humility. Through his teaching, people will find hope. He's called in righteousness. He'll be made a covenant for the peoples, a light for the Gentiles. He will open the blind eyes, and he will release the captives from prison, from the dark dungeon. So let's have a look at these seven of these, and let's see how they relate, first of all, to Jesus, but also the relevance they have for us as well. So the first one says, he will be upheld by none other than God himself. God will take his hand and keep him. We know how important it is for us not to take our hand out of God's hand. Having committed our lives to Jesus Christ, having thrown in our lot with God, not to take our hand from God's hand. And we may be rightly concerned about the way this country is going. But with our hand in God's hand, we can know that if we remain obedient to God, then whatever the outcome, whatever happens here in this country, God is ultimately in control of our lives if we have put them into his hands. And that is why the vulnerable baby Jesus Christ could come in a manger as a vulnerable baby and then become a refugee from the murderous King Herod as he flees to Egypt. But that same baby would accomplish what he came to do. He would grow up to be the man who in God's time and in God's hands would fulfill his purpose. Secondly, he is chosen. Now, this is not to imply there was some sort of lineup with all the angels and God's picked out one of the special angels and said, "I'll call you Jesus and you can be my Messiah, you can be my son." Or that he picked out an especially good human being and said, "Well, you know, I'll put my imprint upon this particular one," then transformed him into a servant or a son. I think the implication here is rather that the task that Jesus had to do was ordained from the very beginning. It was set in place from the start that Jesus would be the one who would carry out God's plan for humanity. Incidentally, of course, this is how Christians are described, as God's chosen. And it's a source of assurance for us. Because if God has chosen you, as Paul says in Romans 8, who can be against you? If God is for you, if God has chosen you, who can be against you? Third thing is that God delights in him. And that's why at Jesus' baptism, which we read about, the voice from heaven is so relevant. This is my son, says the voice, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Fourthly, God's spirit will be on him. Again at his baptism we read, at that moment as he comes out of the water, the heaven was opened and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. If you read last week's reading from Ephesians 1:3-14, you see in that reading that the Spirit is the seal or the deposit for believers. And the Spirit guarantees what is to come. Now, in a sense, as the Spirit comes on Jesus, this is the God's seal of approval alongside the word that was given from heaven. Fifthly, this servant would bring justice to the nations. He would bring it in faithfulness and without giving up. Now, in those days, the Roman world, despite the various benefits of Roman rule, was cruel. It was a cruel place. It was morally corrupt. And in a sense, there's nothing new there. It could be argued that it was even worse before the Romans exercised some control on the Mediterranean. So for those living under Babylonian rule before the Roman rule, they were experiencing the full power of paganism as they had never known it before. You see, if there is no God, if there's no life beyond the grave, then there is no justice either. Stalin will not be judged. Pol Pot will not be judged. Hitler will not be judged. Those in the financial sector who have exploited their customers will escape judgment. Murderers will not be judged. That is, if they can escape the clutches of their fellow human beings. And there are many who do get away with murder in this life. But if there is no God, they will get away with it in the next, because there won't be a next. In other words, people can commit the worst crimes and remain free. If they can remain free until they die, then there is no justice if there is no God. But with God there is justice. It begins with the commands to Adam and Eve, with the law through Moses. It continues with the teaching of Jesus Christ, revealing the way in which we are to live and to relate both to each other and to God. And it ends when Christ comes in great power to judge the world, when the books are opened, so to speak, and evil is dealt with and righteousness prevails. Jesus never gave up. He was faithful to death on the cross to make atonement for the sins of the world. And when Jesus came on the earthly scene, he came, as number 6 says, quietly and with humility. He taught God's just kingdom. And as Christianity caught on, it changed the world. Number 7, through his teaching, people find hope. Where Christ's teaching was genuinely embraced, and I mean genuinely embraced, the world did become a better place, a more just place, and with the potential for better relationships between individuals, and indeed for better relationships between nations. Because Jesus came not to wage war, not to coerce people, but came as a Prince of Peace, primarily to bring peace between humankind and God, but also a peace which would then radiate to other people. Now, of course, not everyone has listened to that message, and history bears out the consequences of that. But the offer is there, and history also bears out evidence of the better lives lived by those who have genuinely embraced God's invitation and taken on his guidance to become true followers, received his Spirit. Eighthly, the servant is called in righteousness. Now that word righteousness is connected both with the idea of rightness, that is right living, but also justice. God's servant, his son Jesus Christ, is right in everything he does. His behavior is righteous. He does the right thing. He lives the perfect life. He is perfectly obedient to the Father, and that's the basis of right living, is being obedient to the Father. But there's also a rightness in the task that he is required to do, which is not only to teach about God's kingdom, which was part of what he did, and to show people how to live, but also the other side of that, which was to die as the perfectly righteous human being, the perfect example of what Israel should have been, but also, more importantly, the perfect sacrifice for the sins of the world. God, in his justice, could not overlook the sin of the world. And Jesus was the just and righteous solution to the problem. Jesus, who is both human and divine, is the only one then who by dying could bring about salvation, could bring about forgiveness for an imperfect and broken world. So it is the righteous person at the center of a righteous plan. The plan itself was right, was just. He was the servant called in righteousness. Number 9, he'll be made a covenant for the peoples. Now, covenant, as you may realize, is one of the major themes of the Bible. Covenant begins with Adam and Eve. God makes a covenant and lays down the conditions for a good relationship and a good life. God makes a covenant later on with Noah as he steps out of the ark, and there is the promise not to destroy the earth by flood again. And it's signed with a rainbow. And God chooses Abraham and makes a covenant with him, which includes the promise of many descendants, the promise of a land, the promise of blessings which will spread to the whole world. And the promise is then repeated to Isaac and to Jacob. And God makes a promise, God makes a covenant with the descendants of Jacob, the children of Israel. And he makes those promises at Mount Sinai. And he gives them the law and warnings about breaking the law and what will happen as a result of breaking the law. And Israel then becomes the people of the covenant, the people of the promise, the people of the agreement. And God promises King David later on that he will always have descendants on the throne forever. How could that be? Well, only through Jesus Christ, of course. And God, through Jeremiah the prophet, to the Jews going into captivity, then gives the promise of a new covenant. Yes, everything's falling apart around you. Everything is going wrong. But there is a new covenant on the way. There is a new covenant on the horizon, which will involve a change of heart and obedience to God born out of that new relationship with him. Something that comes from within, not just set on stone tablets out there. And Jesus then, on the night that he was betrayed, took the cup, and after he had given thanks, gave it to the disciples, saying, "Drink from this, all of you. This is the blood of the new covenant shed for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me." Jesus' death opened the way for forgiveness and for a new life, motivated by no less than the Spirit of God himself. Number 10. The servant would be a light to the Gentiles. So this is the mystery of God's plan revealed. The way of salvation would open the eyes not just of the Jews, but those of every ethnic group in the world. So the covenant promises that came to Abraham would be fulfilled. And I will make you a blessing to the whole world will bless themselves, all the families of the earth will bless themselves, all the ethnic groups, that means, within the world would bless themselves. It's why we're meeting here today. Without that plan, without the fulfillment of that plan, the servant who became the light to the Gentiles, we would not be meeting today. Number 11, he will open the blind eyes. Now Jesus did that literally as he moved around. He healed people and gave people back their sight. But he also opened the eyes of those who were spiritually blind, which was probably more important. And he showed them the way to the Father. In fact, he stated that he is not only showing them the way to the Father, but that he is the way to the Father. I am the way, he said, and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. He will open the blind eyes. And number 12, he will release the captives from prison, the dark dungeon. That's a similar idea, I think, to opening blind eyes, but it emphasizes what a prison sin really is. Our easy lifestyle, I think, often blinds us to the emptiness and the darkness of sin. But for many people, when things do go wrong, when a loved one dies or a house burns down or a family falls apart or failure faces them or their own sin overwhelms them or life suddenly seems purposeless and empty, it's then sometimes that people realize what a dungeon we can live in without the light of the world to show the way. God declares new things to Israel through Isaiah. He offers us today a new beginning in Jesus Christ. So this year, may you have that 2020 vision in this year of the light of the world who shows us the way. Amen.